The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Hello, this is Aniko Gao from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the March 2017 edition of Glamour Magazine, Listening to the Children, Testimonials from the World's Blind and Partially Sighted Teenagers, our novel, Not If I See You First by Eric Lindstrom, and we might have a little surprise at the end. And for right now, we will start with telling you that today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh-Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at www.kiwanisfoundation.org. So welcome back, everyone. Last week, we listened to an article entitled In Praise of Women Who Speak Their Minds. And this week, I thought we would just embellish a little bit on this theme by learning of, you know, some women who have actually really taken a strong stance on topics that they are very passionate about. Glamour Magazine's March 2017 issue has two articles that we'll be considering. One is entitled Every Woman an Activist, and the other one is entitled Raise Your Voice. So today we start, or right now I should say, we'll start with Every Woman is an Activist. We all have things we care about, but where do you start? Four passionate female change makers take on four hot button issues. And this article is by Maddie Kahn. If you care about the environment, 83% of Americans consider climate change a serious problem. But Adrian Ferris, Global Crew Director of the youth-led activism group Earth Guardians, says most of us find the issue overwhelming. Quote, people always say, I'm just one person. How can I make a difference? End quote, she says. If we all thought I'm just one person and I can make a difference, so much would be done. Her two-step plan, one, buy a reusable water bottle. It means less pollution, fewer greenhouse gases, and less energy wasted. Says Ferris, over 80% of water bottles are not recycled, meaning they end up in landfills and in the oceans. Two, shop smarter. According to the World Wildlife Fund, it takes more than 5,000 gallons of water to produce the cotton needed to make a single t-shirt and a pair of jeans. Buy clothes that last, and when you're ready for new ones, donate instead of tossing them. And here's a website, B as in boy, B as in boy, B as in boy, S as in Sam, Foundation, so that's bbbsfoundation.org, offers free pickups. When we do this collectively, huge changes can happen, Ferris says. If you care about gun violence, this is number two. There is a crisis, but there are also solutions, says Shannon Watts, who founded the gun reform organization Moms Demand Action the day after the Sandy Hook shootings. We're not going to stop all homicides, but we can significantly reduce them if we pass certain laws. Her first order of business, closing the, quote, boyfriend loophole, end quote. Though Watts says 90% of Americans and 74% of NRA members support background checks, people convicted of domestic violence can still buy guns in 35 states, as long as they were never married to, lived with, or had a kid with their victim. This gap in legislation matters. A recent study found that nearly half of the mass shootings in 2016 were due to intimate partner violence. Want to fight it? Call your local state representative. And there's a website, openstates.org. www.lifeaboutlove.org is a good resource, and insist they eliminate the gap in protection. Says Watts, quote, "The bills that come up in state houses are as, or more, meaningful to women's lives," end quote. And finally, small acts of bravery. And then there's microactivism. Four inspiring examples. The woman who spread love. I was eating a burger at a diner in Texas when the guy in the next booth started complaining about his disgusting gay nephew. Instead of getting angry, I paid for his meal and signed the receipt. "Happy holidays from the very gay, very liberal table sitting next to you. P.S. Be accepting of your family. Since I uploaded a picture of the receipt on Facebook, I've been getting messages from all over the world saying thank you. That gives me hope in humanity." And that's from Natalie Woods, Denton, Texas. The neighbor who gave away books. After the election, I found myself drawn to the writings of the activist Jane Jacobs, who thought neighborhoods were complex living things. So I set up a book giveaway on my stoop, complete with a stack of the book entitled The Death and Life of Great American Cities. I made the deal that if someone took one, they had to pledge an act of community service. I just caught up with one of the takers. He organized a performance to raise money for homeless youth in the Los Angeles area. And that's by Oscar Boyson and from Brooklyn, New York. And here's another one of the four small acts of bravery. Three acts of bravery. I absolutely love this one. The artist who made a welcome sign. Everyone is welcome here. A friend who worked with Muslim women at an adult literacy class in the Bay Area told me the women felt afraid to leave the house. So I created these posters, and they have one pictured. It has a maroon background with a woman wearing a hijab, and she's got glasses and she's smiling, and the typing, the wording on the top in all caps centered over the entire poster says everyone, and in smaller type underneath everyone says is welcome here. So everyone is welcome here. So she said that she created these posters and made them available for free online. And her website is Mica, and that's M-I-C-A-H, Bazant, B as in boy, A, Z as in zebra, A, N as in Nancy T, so MicaBazant.com. It was my way of helping. Now I get photos from across the country, Montana, North Carolina, showing others putting them up. One thing an artist can do is help people imagine how the world could be different. And her name is Mica Bazant, and she lives in Berkeley, California. So some of the other things that these women have been very, very strongly interested in and taking a stance for. We talked about the environment and gun violence, and here's another one, women's health care. So if you care about women's health care, emancipated from her parents at age 15, Michelle Bratcher Goodwin discovered, quote, "At the time, I could get health care only if I were pregnant or had kids," end quote. She says, "What a perverse system that is." Now a scholar of reproductive health law at the University of California, Irvine, she has a proposition. Women should run for office or encourage other women to. It might seem big and lofty, but it makes a huge difference, says Bratcher Goodwin, whose research has found that states with the fewest female legislators have the most restrictive reproductive health laws. Until women are a more active part of the political process, including being in office, women's basic fundamental interests will be trampled. And lastly, if you care about racial equality, the problem with conflict is we go into situations with our own perspectives and beliefs, says Bernice King, Ph.D., as she's pictured above in this picture. She's got a dark pink jacket on with black buttons and a silver star on her lapel, a silver necklace. She's African American, and she is looking straight ahead with a very a look of resolve in her, but also a smile, a look of hope. We're focused on getting our point across. We are more focused on getting our point across than we are on seeking to understand another person, she says. Here, the CEO of the King Center and daughter of Coretta Scott King and Martin Luther King Jr. schools us on the art of finding common ground. 1. Start talking. Have uncomfortable conversations about race, class, and violence. We're trying to fix this in a day, King says. It's going to take a lot longer. It's going to be fixed through real, organic, engaging relationships and being intentional about that. That's how perspectives change. 2. Read up. I'm a little biased. I'm a proponent of my father's writings, King says. Start with Where Do We Go From Here, which, quote, provides a blueprint for how to deal with some of the issues we face now, end quote. 3. Retweet the good. King calls on women to share success stories. There's no shortage of bad news, but people need to feel a sense of hope. And finally, a wonderful quote by Aidan Ferris. If we all thought, I'm just one person, and I can make a difference, so much would be done. Our second article today also comes from Glamour, March edition, 2017, and it is called Raise Your Voice. These women are, and the world is changing. So this one is about Phoebe Dahl, who is 28, whose company helps support schoolgirls in Nepal. Quote, get out and have heart-to-heart connections with people, she says. Inspired by the buy one, gift one model of companies like Tom's Shoes, the L.A. designer, whose grandfather was children's book author Roald Dahl, founded Faircloth and Supply. Every product sold helps provide uniforms, supplies, and scholarships to schoolgirls in Nepal, where an estimated 12,000 to 15,000 young women are trafficked every year. Traffickers are less inclined to kidnap a girl who looks like she has a future, says Dahl. When you give a uniform, she says, the look in those girls' eyes is like their world is opening up. And the other one we're going to read is from Nelufar Hedayat, who reports on global black markets. Her quote, you can change the world, one tweet, one penny at a time. Born in Afghanistan and raised in London, Hedayat is the investigative journalist behind Fusion's docuseries, quote, The Traffickers, end quote, which chronicles atrocities such as human trafficking and fake pharmaceuticals. But her work has come at a price. She has received an avalanche of hate mail from some fellow Muslims who believe that a woman's place is only in the home, subservient and silent. I ignore the hate and keep on, she says. The biggest enemy of change is apathy. Our next story is from listening to the children, testimonials from the world's blind and partially sighted teenagers. Today we'll be hearing from Fatoumata Diallo. She lives in Gambia, Africa, and she is 15 years old. All human beings are created by Almighty God. He made us the way He wanted. So, for that matter, we are different from each other with respect to our qualities, characteristics, and behavior. It is these features that influence the way human beings are being regarded in society. I am Fatoumata Diallo, a visually impaired teenage girl, a Gambian by nationality, a country found in West Africa. I am very much glad for my unique privileged experience as a visually impaired teenager. However, I went through both sides of life, the difficulties and the good times which I have experienced. I would like to start with the difficult ones. When I was less than 10 years old, my eyes were operated on due to vision problems. I was then enrolled in primary school with them due to my condition. I had to withdraw and went back to the village to my mother. After a year in the village, I returned to the city to stay with my stepmother, but she could not accommodate me due to my condition that I may be a burden, so my brother took up the responsibility of taking care of me. He therefore enrolled me in St. Mary's Primary School. But unfortunately, he died 4 months later. There was no option for me then than to go back and stay with my mother in the village again. But because I am determined to learn, I encouraged my mother to send me to school in the village. I could not stay there either because rural teachers were not trained to handle me. However, things began to change this time positively for me. I was enrolled in GOVI Resource Center for the Blind in 2002. Because of my experience from my former school, learning became less difficult. I graduated from GOVI Resource Center in 2007, and I am now integrated in a mainstream school called Kalinding Upper Basic School. In this school, I do better than many sighted students in the class. Therefore, I am taking this opportunity to appeal to philanthropists, benevolent organizations, and society at large to assist and support people like me so as not to become a social misfit tomorrow. We need to be independent and self-reliant. Last week we started a book entitled Not If I See You First by Eric Lindstrom, and it was about a girl with visual impairment, and she actually is a runner, and she woke up and realized that her father actually had died. He was still in bed, and he had been dead for hours. That was the prologue. Today we start chapter one. Marissa is sobbing again. And then he didn't. Her deep voice almost sounds like grunting. Pathetic. And she's smart, too, except about Owen. Can't you guys talk to him? I don't reply, and neither does Sarah. We offer good advice, for free even, but never get involved. We've told Marissa this countless times. It would waste oxygen to say it again. We just have to wait for her to dry out. There's nothing to do till the bell rings anyway. Last school year, this scene repeated itself every few weeks. Marissa rarely speaks to me otherwise. I can't clearly remember what she sounds like without wailing, snuffling, gasping, coughing on tears and snot, and really needing to blow her nose. It's a common belief that losing your sight heightens your other senses, And it's true, but not by magnifying them. It just gets rid of the overwhelming distraction of seeing everything all the time. On the other hand, my experience of sitting with Marissa consisted almost entirely of hearing everything her mouth and nose were capable of in sticky detail. That's what unrequited love sounds like to me. Disgusting. Parker, can't you do something? I am. I'm telling you to find someone else. I pause, per the usual script, so she can interrupt. No! I'm the reigning queen of not giving a darn what other people think. But Marissa's indifference to a junior quad full of people, on the first day of school no less, seeing her imitate a shrieking mucus factory, it humbles even me. Marissa, listen, soulmates don't exist, but if they did, they would be two people who want each other. You want Owen, but Owen wants Jasmine, so that means Owen is not your soulmate. You're just his stalker. Wait, Jasmine? I enjoy a moment of peace as the surprise of this information, which we told her last spring, quiets her for a moment. Isn't she? Yes, Jasmine likes girls, but she hasn't found one in particular yet, so Owen stupidly thinks he has a chance. That makes him following her around only slightly more pointless and sad than you following him around. In fact, Sarah clicks her tongue, and I know what it means, but at some speeds, I have too much momentum to stop or even slow down. The only thing you and Owen have in common is being in love with someone who doesn't love you back, someone you don't even know. Have you ever even looked up words like love or soulmate or even relationship in a dictionary? The silence that follows is the perfect example of the thing I hate most about being blind, not seeing how people react to what I say. But, Marissa sniffs productively, if we spent some time to get saved by the bell, her and me both, but mostly her. Well, if it isn't PG-13 and her all-seeing eye dog, the familiar screech is to my left and accompanied by a locker door clattering open. Please tell me her locker isn't right over there, I say to Sarah in a stage whisper. I found out over the summer I'm allergic to PVP. Now I have to carry an EpiPen in my bag. Oh, Faith says in her snippy voice. I'm PVP. That's people, polyvinyl pyrrolidone, used in hairspray, hair gel, glue sticks, and plywood. Well, I think PVP means people who are very popular. I laugh, breaking character. Fay, did you just think that up? Of course I did. I'm not as dumb as you look. The odor of kiwi strawberry tells me what's about to happen, and I brace myself. I'd call it a bear hug, except Faith is too skinny to do anything bearish. I hold on a bit too long and then let go. Do you really have an EpiPen? She asks. God, Fay, Sarah says, do you even know what that is? My nephew's allergic to peanuts. And do you know you're a pretentious, condescending chick? Yes, I do. The rush of air and Sarah's answer tells me Faith gave her a hug, too. Can you believe all these strangers, Faith says, making no attempt to whisper. This place is a zoo. At least it's them invading us, Sarah says, and not the other way around. All true. The town of Coastview can't support two high schools anymore, so Jefferson closed and everyone came here to Adams. The halls are so jammed with people who don't know the rules, and not just the freshmen, that I had to hold on to Sarah's arm to get through the chaos to my locker. Breaking in this many newbies will be messy, but at least I don't have to learn the layout of an entirely different school. Oh, hey, here comes another one, Fate says, closer and softer, this time remembering rule number two. And she hugs me again. I'm sorry I was stuck in Vermont all summer. You know I'd have come if I could, don't you? I'm fine, I say quickly, hoping that will end the subject. Did I see you guys talking to Marissa this morning? Was she crying? New year, same baloney, says Sarah. Please tell me it's over, a new guy. Really? No. I imagine various facial expressions and nods and eyebrow wagging, filling in the gaps. That's what you spent the morning talking about? Pretty selfish of her. Wait, I can hear that Faith has turned to face me. Does she even know? Didn't you tell her? Right, I say. Oh, Marissa, while you spent the summer crying over some complete stranger, my dad died, and my aunt's family moved here because my house is better than theirs. So, Faith says, that's something you just thought, or you actually said that? Jesus, Faye. I'm honest, but I'm not mean. Some exceptions apply, Sarah says. I have to go. I unfold my cane. With all these noobs in the way, it's going to take a while to get to Trig. Haven't they assigned her a new buddy? Faith asks Sarah as I tap down the hall. Who is it? Didn't Petra move to Colorado or somewhere? I'm grateful they can talk about my buddy without sounding awkward. It can't be one of them. Faith is too busy socially, translation popular, and Sarah doesn't qualify because she's not taking enough of my honors and AP classes. But there's a girl from Jefferson who's in all of my classes, and she was willing, so the choice pretty much made itself. Well, we're going to have to stop there as we're running out of time for today's program. I do want to end with a poem. This one is by Henri Frédéric Amiel. And the poem says, "We are all visionaries, and what we see is our soul in things." We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Annika Gall, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.